Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is Acadiana's number one sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on 1037thegame.com and on the 1037 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Schutz. It's the producers on 1037 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Welcome, everyone, to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com on 316 Day. Oh, hell yeah!
Can't get it started better than that, man. Stone Cold Steve Austin just busting through the glass,
what?
Man. That's fantastic.
So great. How can we not start things off with some Stone Cold Steve Austin
that didn't
on
get you
316
hype,
Day? That better get you hype, man, on a Saturday morning. Getting your weekend kickstarted live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. From the roof to the roots of Acadiana, this place got you covered with roof. Just call 237-ROOF, 237-7663. But if you want to call us, what? You got to call us up on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Oh, hell yeah. It's a 316 day, and we got a lot to cover. Of course, we got to talk LSU basketball losing to Florida in a controversial fashion. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk a little bit about the Cajuns run of the Sun Belt tourney, Cajuns baseball. We'll talk Saints free agency, which is going to be a big poll question we're going to have up in just a little bit, about the most important Saints free agency move so far. We'll dive into that in a little bit. But first, I want to get to some of LSU basketball, because my goodness, it's been a ridiculous, like, last week. Am I wrong here?
I don't know. I mean, it's been crazy. You've had the whole issue with Will Wade and then Javonte Smart. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? And in the end, he got to play, but I felt they needed Will Wade a lot more than they needed They needed Javonte Smart. Yesterday.
Oh, exactly. I think they definitely needed Will Wade a whole lot more than Javonte Smart. Javonte Smart was a really good piece, but at the same time, you know, I believe it was only him and Naz Reid who wound up putting up. Naz Reid were the only two players that we put up double digits yesterday.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it just speaks more to the fact of how good of a bench coach and in-game coach Will Wade is.
Yep,
you know. He showed it all year long. LSU gets a lot of knock for winning a lot of close ball games, but I think that's actually a tip of the hat to Will Wade. He keeps them in ball games, and he knows how to win at the end. Yesterday, they were down there in crunch time, and they were missing that general.
They really were. They were missing that general. They're missing Corporal Will Wade. But it's just, like, I was thinking about it, like, all last week, all throughout the show. I was saying, basically, like, the whole thing with him not approaching LSU, not telling them what was going on, not giving them any remote idea of what the dealio is with the situation, that really is a bad look for him. And it's also a bad look for LSU as a whole, because you got to think about it. It's just going to be tough for him to get a job in the NCAA ever again. Mind you, that's largely because there's a lot of wiretapping going on. And, like, Will Wade's young enough to have watched The Wire, right?
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's a great show. But, I mean, I think this situation is leaving both Will Wade and the administration with a lot of egg on their face. Will Wade for not even going in and talking to his employer. Look, if you can't answer the questions because of an investigation, you can state that once you meet with them, but not to even want to show up and meet with your employer. Look, if I wouldn't show up and meet with my boss when he wanted to talk to me, they'd fire me as well. I think the arrogance and the immaturity that Will Wade's shown in this situation is going to leave a lot of stink on his name for a long time.
It really will. We're going to go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline for a hot minute to talk with our guy Ken. Hopefully he's still not hot over, like, 8 days later. What's going on, Ken?
I'm pretty good. But, you know, we need to talk. We need to move on. That show is over. Will Wade's over. He's not going to coach again. It's about benefiting the team right now. As the player said on yesterday, It's time to move on. Forget about Will Wade. He's never coaching at LSU again.
Ken.
And so, I mean, it's the tournament now. You know, probably 3, 4 seed, whatever it's going to be, and do the best that you can, and you hire a new coach.
Can this team make a run in the NCAA tournament with Benford as the head coach in the current situation of the team?
Well, we don't know that. We'll have to see. But it regardless, it doesn't matter. Will Wade is a done deal. We need to move on. It's time to move on. Forget about Will Wade. He did what he had to do. He brought the team from the ash heap, no doubt about it. But he's tainted. You know, got caught. All right, move on. It's time to move on. We can't. These guys can't worry about what Will Wade this, that, and that. They got another coach. It's time to move. You're in the NCAA tournament. Thank God they're in the NCAA tournament. It's been many, many years. I'm so happy for them to be in the tournament. But it's time to move on from Will Wade.
I mean, but if LSU goes and loses, you know, in the first round game or you know, gets, you know, beat in the second round game, how do we look at this season? I mean, you know, without Will Wade in the NCAA tournament, it's always going to be the question, could they have made a run if they had their guy on the bench? You know, it's just going to be a question that we're going to hear until the tournament's over.
Well, yeah, would have, could have, should have, man. But the bottom line is they had a successful season. He brought him from the F sheet. I salute him for that. But now he's tarnished and tainted. So let's just move on and then get a good coach, get a coach next season. You know, Benford is not going to be the head coach. We all know that. Get another coach, and you got to move on. You can't just stay stagnant and talk about Will Wade, Will Wade. Will Wade's done. And you go into the tournament, we're still going to talk about Will Wade. Will Wade needs to shut his mouth and let LSU play. And you tell him he want to get his job back. Man, you're not getting your job back. It's done. All right, thank you.
I appreciate the call, Ken. And look, he is right in a sense, but, I mean, that's what's going to happen, though. People are going to talk about it, and they want to talk about what would have happened or what could have happened or should have happened, kind of like he said, and that's just the bottom line of what's going to happen. Now, as far as LSU going out and get a, you know, a big-time coach, what kind of guy's going to want to come over here and coach under this administration with all this scrutiny under the program?
I mean, you think like a Benford would probably be the ideal situation because of the fact, like think about it. It's a lot like the Matt Luke situation and Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss.
Oh, for sure.
Like I said, you've got to have somebody in there and somebody who's already in the system, who's just willing to kind of handle this, like deal with the sanction that they're dealing with, and then like sign up to a couple-year contract as long as those sanctions are still in place, and then you can get rid of that guy and then move on from there. That's what would probably be the ideal situation for LSU.
The next guy who comes in and coaches this LSU basketball team is simply a placeholder. You know, just like you mentioned, it's Benford could be a piece. But
he could be a really good coach. I'm not doubting him at all. I mean, he's been a head coach in the past, but I feel like there's levels to this stuff, and you know you're going to wind up having a lot of sanctions. You're going to have a lot of things going against you. I mean, you could very well have hypothetically a death penalty if things are as bad as people are saying they could be. Like all these wiretappings, it could be.
Yeah, you know,
more.
Look.
I'm not.
We'll see how bad they are. I mean,
I'm not crucifying the man
all
at this
day
point.
On Thursday. How bad this Our Lady of the Lake stuff was going to be?
Oh, it's awful.
And it came in, and it's really nothing for LSU.
But still, it's just the fact you've already had the NCAA looking at you.
It's nothing, man. This is absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
It's laughable. You hired a player's parent from, you know, for a 3-year period that dates back to over 3 years ago.
It's laughable from that perspective.
Nothing's going to happen.
I mean, it's laughable when you look at it from the LSU Athletics perspective, but $810,000 taken by one guy, that's a laughing matter.
It's laughable how a lot of the talking heads or, you know, message boards chatter where, you know, this is going to be awful for LSU. This could be the, you know, big-time ball drop right here.
Yeah, it really could, but, I mean, at the same time.
And it wasn't, though.
It wasn't, but also the fact you already have the NCAA kind of starting
to look. My point is, we're going to have to wait and see when the facts come out from this wiretap thing because, you know, nobody knows.
We're not going to find out until about, is it April 23rd or something like that?
Yeah.
But like I said, looking outside of obviously the Will Wade situation, I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But I really want to get to talking about the actual game that happened yesterday. My goodness, I talked about it last week in a poll question about on the producers is the state of Louisiana like curse, snake bit, if you will? And I think we kind of started to realize it might be an actual thing because we talked about it, the no call. The LSU-Texas A&M 7 overtime game. Will Wade saga, Anthony Davis saga, and then you wind up losing largely because of a six-point trip because of a very, very questionable foul call with under like a minute to go. And you can't review that? What the hell is going on?
No, I know a lot of people are going to point their fingers at that, but hey, LSU had some awful possessions down the stretch.
They did. They did.
You know, these just didn't help their cause. They didn't lose specifically because of that one bad
But don't
call
you think that's
it didn't help their it didn't help them.
That 6-point play was a huge momentum shift
because
LSU was in control for I'd say a good 80% of that ball game. They were in control of things. They were able to get things going. It's just you weren't able to kind of keep that gap between you and Florida. And that 6-point play or the 6-point trip, however you want to call it, because you had a 3-pointer and then you made 3 of your 4 free throws. Honestly, they made all 4 of them. I think that could have been a death knell for them right then and there because it's just tough for me to think that LSU, within that final minute, the team's gassed. They weren't necessarily getting it done offensively. That was the biggest thing. I talked about it at the beginning of the segment, was how LSU did not have like more than 2 guys go for double digits. It was a lot more like 8-9 points spread amongst the rest of the team.
And I think that goes to what I was talking about having bad trips down the floor and bad possessions, you know, not moving the ball around and not getting, you know, more guys involved. They put up a lot of bad shots in that last stretch in the back half of the second half. And I think that speaks a lot of not having the head coach there, not having somebody to rally the guys up and getting them to run the offense that you want to run.
Or you could wind up probably also saying Florida's just a lot better of a team.
I think Florida's just a bad matchup for LSU.
But for what it's worth, don't you think it would have, like, it was just tough in general because you look at the quarterfinal matchups that you could have had. It was either going to be a Florida or Arkansas, a team in Arkansas who you lost to at home, a team that you beat on the road. You wind up splitting that series, and then you have a team like Florida. Florida, I have to agree with you, is a tough matchup because of the fact that you've lost to them once. And both those games went to overtime. You knew it was going to be a battle. I think that was the biggest thing. Everybody knew it was going to be a battle, but my question is, how long would they have lasted even if they went to the next round, went to the semifinals?
We'll never know. I mean,
no, yeah, of course. Like I said, we're talking hypotheticals.
You know, LSU got a lot of trouble from both of those clubs, but specifically Florida was just a horrible matchup for them. The tempo that they like to play at, they like to play in the half court. That's just not what LSU does.
And I was hearing the CBS Sports update at the bottom of the hour earlier when I was kind of prepping the show up, and he brought up the fact that it was like a surprise. I'm like, dude, they beat them in overtime like a month ago. This isn't really that much of a surprise to me. I think it's just the fact that it happened. I think everybody was kind of shocked about, at least on a national level. On a local level, I think we weren't surprised at all. I was saying on Thursday that they weren't going to wind up winning the ball game because it felt like there's too much. Well, I hate to talk about Will Wade again, but there's too much background noise. Coach Joe, Will Wade, they talked about blocking out the noise. They always talk about that. Here's the thing. There's a point to where the background noise and blocking out that noise is damn near impossible.
No, it's coming from all angles, you know, national, local.
I mean, you got Javonte Smart dealing with a lot. Yeah.
And you got to deal with your own administration. It's a whole lot of noise. But
I mean, that's why I'm glad LSU played Vanderbilt last Saturday.
At the end of the day, though, they played this Florida team twice with Will Wade without this outside noise, and they've struggled with them both times. That just shows you the matchup problems that the style of play and the type of team Florida is that causes, you know, LSU a lot of trouble.
Like I said, it just felt – yeah, well, I mean, like I said, you wound up having control of that ballgame for a good chunk of it, so I feel like it might have been a little bit too much just like – they might have put in cruise control a little bit too early too. I think that's another thing that I got to say because they were up like double digits at half. I think I was like, oh, man, this is impressive. They might be able to get things done offensively to be able to come away with a win and then advance to the next round of the postseason, which would have been huge and also cut us by like a half hour. Would have cut us at the knees quite literally. But we got 2 full hours of stuff to get to. 10:30, we'll have Wilson Alexander on Of The Advocate to talk some LSU baseball up against Kentucky. It's a doubleheader today, so we'll talk to him about that. And then 11:30, Greg Peterson, the man. We got to have him on heading into March Madness. He'll give us his thoughts on the brackets, where he thinks LSU's going to land, and a lot of other notable matchups in conference tournaments this weekend. You're listening to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The producers on 103.7 The Game on a Louisiana Saturday morning. Now, back to the other side of the glass.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And I got to say, we're talking a lot about LSU basketball. We can talk about LSU baseball with Wilson Alexander in the next segment. But in the meantime, and in between time, I want to get into some Saints talk, because we got a big poll question up on our Twitter account, at 103.7 The Game. You can follow us over there. Also follow at 103.7 Producers, at Clint Doming, and is it, all right, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's at Blaine_Vietar?
Blaine_Vietar.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was a second underscore there.
No, there's just one underscore.
Is it, no, Andrew Lopez's is like Andrew_Lopez_, which is weird.
No, mine's just,
but I think that's just
Blaine_Vietar.
I think it's just because of, like, Andrew Lopez seems like it would be more of a recurrence of that name as opposed to Blaine Vietar.
Unless somebody already got the Blaine Vietar, man. I didn't
I'm disappointed in you.
Yeah.
But anyways, so the question is, what's been the most important Saints free agency move so far? I put three of them up there because I, like, Mario Williams, I'm not necessarily all in on to put him in the poll question. I feel like putting the first three guys they wound up getting in free agency, Teddy Bridgewater, Malcolm Brown, Latavius Murray.
For me, it's Malcolm Brown. I mean, you win games in the trenches. You get a guy who was a former first-round pick, played on a, you know, New England Patriots
team. He's got two rings.
And won Super Bowls, right? So he's a winner.
But he's not necessarily like he's a winner, but it's not like, oh, hey, he's a integral part of that defense. You know, like, you look at his numbers, they don't necessarily show a whole lot. I agree with you.
Malcolm, I think what they asked him to do is keep backers clean and let them run free.
And he's more of a run defender, basically.
Right.
He's more of a stout run defender, but like I said, the numbers don't necessarily bear out how good he can be. I think you just look at those numbers, you're not going to see a whole heck of a lot.
I think he's a guy who could just come in and fortify that defensive line. I mean, they were already pretty good at times last year. A guy like Teddy Bridgewater coming back to be a backup on a one-year deal is not going to get me too excited, Clint.
But, I mean, you got to think about it from a perspective of, like, history and how it seems like Teddy Bridgewater is. I think Teddy Bridgewater is one to be all in with the New Orleans Saints and take a shot, because you got to think about it. 13 years ago, Thursday, when he finally signed the contract after kind of having second thoughts and going to Miami to figure out if he was going to go back home, he signed the contract. 13 years ago, back in 2006, Drew Brees signed that contract, that six-year deal. Mind you, it's a big difference. But still, there's something to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Saints are all in this year.
So they've been all in since, like, last year.
Well, I mean, the way they just restructured Breeze's contract and move all that money around, it's like, it's, but don't you think that, bust, it feels like.
Don't you think that's typical Saints, though? Because that feels like it's every year you're going to wind up seeing Drew Brees kind of move that contract around.
But has he done it this much in the past? You haven't seen
I
haven't seen him do it like this, right?
I think
he realizes that this is it for him.
I don't think so, because he did it, I think, a year before his contract ran. Like, the year before he had that five-year extension, he actually had done it, like, extended it a little bit more.
As much as we all love Drew, I mean, right, he's the most greedy of the big-time quarterbacks, right? He always, you know, wants all the money. You don't ever see him signing for less. He doesn't move his money around as much as
he moves his money around probably way more than most quarterbacks.
I don't agree with that at all. Want to talk about the ultimate guys, could be Tom Brady moving his money
around. Well, obviously.
And Peyton Manning did it as well. Drew's a give-it-all-to-me kind of guy.
I disagree with that, like, heavily. Because, like I said, I've seen in the past, he's, like, especially in recent years, after that big money contract he got in 2014.
The one that he screwed the organization, didn't allow him to make any other moves.
And then, after.
Right? Could you say that's why the Saints had, you know, what, went a little bit of a stretch where they struggled?
The 7 and 9 years?
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily going to pin it all on that.
But that could be a part of it,
it
right?
It was part of it, but at the same time, you made some very crappy offseason decisions alongside that. Because, I mean, you didn't, in that time frame, you signed Brandon Browner, Champ Bailey, Jarris Bird, like, those three guys off the top of my head defensively, they did not make worth a damn of an impact. Jarris Bird was...
Some of those guys didn't play hardly.
Champ Bailey.
Yeah.
Champ Bailey never made it past training camp, like, a week. And then you have Brandon Browner, Guy was flagged more than anybody in the NFL in that season. The dude was a locker room cancer. So I feel like it's not necessarily all on Drew Brees. A lot of it had to do with the front office, not knowing what the hell they were doing with free agency. Ireland's a big reason why. I feel like this free agency moves the last couple of seasons have been like A minus.
I don't want to go off on a tangent. I just wanted to prove a point to you that, you know, Drew Brees has not helped the organization out in the past.
He hasn't always, but I feel like he's helped out enough in the last couple of seasons to be able to get them to this point. And also, the front office finally got their head out of their asses and realize what they need to do to be able to succeed and be able to build a franchise, build something that's sustainable rather than, oh, hey, every year we're going flipping 7-9 like Jeff Fisher's the head coach.
I mean, is it sustainable or is just we're all in for this year?
No, I don't think it's an all in like this year. They were all in last year. It's a, oh, hey, we're all in on being the best that we can be. It's not like we're seeing with the Los Angeles.
I don't see it the same way as you.
All right. Well, look at the Los Angeles Rams. They were all in for last year. They signed a lot of names for like one these big money deals, and like I said, they wound up coming up short in the Super Bowl. I feel like the Rams were more of an all in team in comparison to what the New Orleans Saints have done in the past year. Because like I said, I feel like once they got Alvin Kamara, once they got these guys, and
they have to lock him up pretty soon, right?
Nah, he's only in his third year. He's got one more year free. He's got I think so. He's got one more year. It's like a 4-year contract, a rookie contract, correct?
Michael Thomas is going to have to be locked up.
Michael Thomas is like locked up this coming off season. So that's probably the biggest thing. That's just going to suck because I know Drew Brees is going to have to kind of say, hey, you know, move a good chunk of this down because that's going to wind up hurting the cap. It's like a $20.2 million cap hit, if I'm not mistaken, that Drew Brees is going to have in 2020. I wouldn't be surprised if he does it again because he knows Michael Thomas needs to be locked down long term because this dude is an absolute stud. I'd probably say wind up locking down Teddy Bridgewater long term unless you absolutely positively love a quarterback in the 2020 draft class. And trust me, there are a lot of them you can choose from.
Now, I think the biggest impact of free agency is still on the market for the Saints, and that's Jared Cook.
Oh, if they
that's
get
been a, that's just been a glaring hole, right? A tight end position,
no
for
doubt.
Years
I mean,
now.
Exactly, you know. But at the same time, it's like it's been a hole. But at least you're able to have a hole to where you're not necessarily kind of henpecked because you had Jimmy Graham couldn't block worth a damn. At least you have like guys that can block worth a damn. It's just you have Josh Hill dropping passes.
Jared Cook fits that mold that he could do both, right?
Exactly. Jared Cook's a dual threat tight end. I know that's a weird term, but it makes sense, right?
Yeah, it does. He could be inline block, and he could kind of stretch the field a little bit.
Let's go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to The Producers on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Now, returning to the only show bringing you weekly appearances from the Coach Foe. Clint may have to step out when he gets here. They really don't like each other. It's the Producers on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, and also online around the entire world on the free mobile app powered by Visit Avery Island. Currently efforting to get Wilson Alexander aboard the show. I think it's easier said than done, considering it's St. Paddy's Day weekend. I know definitely a lot of busy times for a lot of people who want to do things outside of cover. A doubleheader baseball game coming up today. LSU baseball right here on 103.7 The Game. A doubleheader. That's really cool stuff.
Yeah, the rain didn't cooperate yesterday. It looked like it was going to be great forecast all weekend for baseball, but Mother Nature
like, I got out of nowhere, too.
Yeah.
Further proving that Louisiana weather is just bipolar as all get out. Like, wasn't it, like, warm, like, really nice last weekend, and now we got, like, a cold front for the umpteenth time? It's March 16th, and we're, like, still, like, hovering around, like, 50, 60 degrees. What happened to global warming?
Yeah, I think this is just such an important series for LSU. I mean, this is a Kentucky team that...
That's not a Kentucky team like last year.
They're a little bit
different. You don't have jelly?
No, they hit for a lot of pop recently, but this is a little bit of team that likes to run on the base pads, stealing a whole bunch of bags. But this is a very important series because, one, you're at home.
Yep.
Two, it's opening weekend in SEC play. You want to get started on the right foot, and it's a winnable series. After this, you got to go Mississippi State and Georgia back-to-back, both teams in the top 10. Go on the road. That's something that you have proven that you cannot do so far yet this year.
But is Mississippi State as tough as it like has been in the past? That's my
thing. I mean, they're like number six in the country and beat Florida on the road last night. So
okay.
I mean, I don't know what you consider tough, but that's a team that what made it to Omaha last year. So I mean,
I'll give them credit, though. I'll give that team a lot of credit for being able to do that, considering the fact that they wound up having Andy Canizero,
the head coach of Holy Cross High School. In New Orleans.
Yeah, he got Das Boot because of a lot of off the field issues, if you will. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, so I think that playing at the Dude is still a very tough thing to do.
Especially the new dude.
Yeah, the new dude. You got what? The lofts in the left hand.
Yeah, people getting it on field. In the lofts. Like yeah. You can just see sheets moving around and things are going on.
2019 is crazy.
It's a weird place to live, not gonna lie.
But another thing about this LSU series, too, is that the pitching staff's so beat up right now. I mean, Zach Hess probably is your most healthy pitcher. He hasn't been able to get past six innings yet this year. I know Cole Henry's going to give it a go. Yep. Last week he looked fantastic against Kyle, but he had to leave the game after just pitching, what, four innings with back stiffness. So this is a team that the pitching staff's just kind of banged up a little bit right now. And they really got to get the SEC season started off on the right foot.
That's the thing. You need to get this conference play like started off right. And if you can wind up sweeping this, that play is huge. But I feel like it's going to be tough with a doubleheader.
When you're talking SEC baseball, man, you talk about winning two out of three. you never take sweeps for granted.
Oh, no, exactly. Especially against a team like Kentucky that has been tough in recent years. But like I said, it's going to be fun to see what happens this weekend against Kentucky. And like you said, you get tough competition the next couple weekends. And then, of course, you get into the meat of SEC play. I think this is going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is an LSU team that just historically, you know, once you get to about April, they just kind of start playing. They kind of ride the ship. So
it's just they haven't been hitting nearly as well.
Hitting has been hot and cold. I mean, they've played games where they've hit really well, some games not so much. Northwestern State was able to hold them down over on Tuesday night.
That was weird.
I mean, what, that kid, was it McDowell?
Yeah, no, I'm Colin McDonald.
McDonald.
I mean, the dude had like a .69 ERA heading into it. So, I mean he was quite nice.
Sitting in the 60s? Did you see that?
Yeah, he was hitting it, man.
Yeah, man. The Demons 7 2/3. 134 pitches on a Tuesday night.
When you're hot, you're hot, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably their typical like midweek guy. You would think.
No.
Okay.
That's their Friday guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm about to check this out now.
Yeah.
See how he did.
I was told that was their Friday guy to start the season.
It was Nicholls State, right?
No,
Northwestern State. Okay. It was in the inletter, so let's just go with it.
I think this is an LSU team that can still accomplish a lot. They have a lot of talent there. They just got to kind of gel together and put it all together and play their best brand of baseball in the SEC.
I mean, they have to. Same thing with the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, who have just been off to a very, very rough start. My goodness, 7-11 on the year.
Last night was tough again. They dropped one to Little Rock last night.
Yeah, Little Rock 4-1.
Speaking of swinging the bats, I mean, this is a Cajuns team that's kind of tough.
Oh no, Cullen wasn't the Friday night guy.
He wasn't. Okay.
No, it was Ridge Heisler, and they got the win last night.
And well, no,
complete game effort.
Well, Clint, if he threw 134 pitches on Tuesday, you think he was gone on Friday?
Probably not. But like I said, I just feel like maybe that guy he's going to take the rest of the week off, safe to say.
Yeah.
But hey, they still got the win, so hey, congrats to them.
The Raging Cajuns and swinging the bat. I mean,
that's been very, like, I'll say this. The Cajuns have never necessarily been like a, like, hitting with consistency type squad. They had
the 1 year.
That 1 year, they've had from time to time. But you got to realize, I feel like with them, Cajun, with the team, with Russo Park, it's not necessarily a, like, hitter's park. It's more, I'd say it's more of a pitcher's park. Would I be wrong on that?
Nah, I mean, a whole lot of greenery there.
I'm just saying, like, you're not going to see as many like big extra base hits with a lot of consistency. Like, you don't, unless you're like a dude who's just like completely jacked and just ripping them, like Brad Salum did back in the early 2000s. You're not going to see a whole lot of guys just going yard a lot of the time. You had to really have some pop with it. to be able to go yard and have these big extra base hits, these plays that wind up swinging them. I just feel like it's more of a pitcher's park than a hitter's. I guess that's based off what I've seen this year and the last several years. The Cages aren't necessarily a hitting team. They just haven't been able to get it done at the dish. I think that's the biggest reason why they're at where they're at. And I just love how the internet, and this is something I want to talk about at the beginning of the show, but I kind of saved it for later, was the fact that a lot of people want coaches fired left and right. I mean, we look at it. At what is probably, I know you probably keep an eye on the certain purple and gold forums and message boards more than I do. Almost certain after that Northwestern State loss, there was a lot of people probably wanting to fire Paul Maneri.
I think
everybody just wants
baseball. I mean, for a long enough time that they realize a midweek game is a midweek baseball game.
Yeah, you would hope.
You do hear those rumbles every year about Paul Maneri. It usually comes in the postseason when LSU can't cash in and get to Omaha. We haven't won a national championship in 10 years this year.
Yeah, it'll be 10 years this year.
There's rumblings that they're strong about Paul Maneri. I would say that more people wanted Paul Maneri fired than Ed Orgeron this year, which is different.
Oh, wow. This just came out of Tulane head coach Mike Dunleavy. He's out the door after 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so potentially Andy Kennedy may be a target, according to Fear the Wave blog. So, like I said, there's that going on right now outside of Lafayette and Baton Rouge news. New Orleans basketball still in an upheaval, especially with Tulane basketball, apparently. Mike Dunleavy, a lot of hype behind him, but couldn't live up to it.
No, I mean, he had a whole lot of experience.
Coming out of the booth.
I know they had a lot of optimism when they hired him. It just didn't work out.
Did not work out at all, but man, as going back to some of the talk, it's because I know a lot of people.
Those rumblings are getting pretty loud. The Vermillion and White.
Oh, Vermillion and White. Oh, boy, boy,
for
boy.
For a coach that, pretty much for coaches.
For coaches, let's be honest. Because Bob Marlin, everybody's been saying that for months. We had somebody call in with that take.
They just re-upped Bob, right, last year?
I believe it was a couple years ago. I believe he's maybe towards the tail end of it, but he's still got a couple years left on his contract. And I'll say this. If you get rid of Bob Marlin now, that's going to be tough. You're losing a lot of talent out there. Malik Marchetti's done. Jakeen Gant's done.
Those rumblings are just going to get louder and louder.
And, like I said, they're going to get louder and louder. But it's if you fired him tomorrow, hypothetically, then you're leaving, the next head coach, really, the cupboard's bare, if you will. You got a lot of young guys that I feel like could be impact players, but it's not necessarily you're not leaving him. He's inheriting not a whole lot, basically, is what I'm saying.
What I find even a bigger joke is, and look, I know these guys, and I normally respect their opinions, but some guys who are in the Section A for UL, big-time guys that I'm friends with on Twitter, Facebook, and all that, man, they're on Robe, get rid of Robe. It's time. It's run its course, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Why would you get rid of a guy that helped build your program and build this mecca of baseball stadiums? The Tinker Russo Park is probably one of the best parks in the Sun Belt Conference, and I feel like it's probably one of the, it's up there in terms of baseball stadiums in the country in terms of college baseball.
Yeah,
I mean, mind you, the new dude is just on another level now.
I would say
he's got people getting on in the lofts.
Yeah, I would say what he did at UL is just incredible.
It's been phenomenal to see what head coach Tony Robichaud has done. And, people want to say that, but I'm like, dude, Tony Robichaud's not going to get fired.
Oh,
he's
no,
he's going to hang it up. He's going to leave on his own accord. And there's going to be no rumor or innuendo because everybody knows there's a lot of goodwill with him in the community. Everybody loves him. The second Tony Robichaud retires, he's coming out with a book. I guarantee you that.
That man needs to be a motivational speaker. We need to get him in front of our youth.
Exactly. I would love to kind of have him every year before high school baseball season starts, kind of bring a lot of the team, doing sections, obviously, but just do a tour to hit up all the parishes and give these guys a big motivational speech and have them try to help them out and understand. And also with the coaches as well. That's a big thing. I know Robichaud, he's done these speakings in the past. He's a really great speaker. And he had a really good speech, I know, a while back in front of a bunch of umpires for high school baseball. And like I said, that's the biggest thing I think Tony Robichaud is going to wind up doing after he winds up retiring as the head coach of Cajuns baseball, because he's not getting fired. And the people who say that,
I don't think they're necessarily saying, let's fire him. It's just like, I think this run is course. It's, you know, it's time for something. Maybe it's time for him to hang it up. And,
well, yeah, like I said, I think that would be the ideal thought process, because the way you were telling me before the show was that they wanted him out the door, just kind of like,
well,
get him out.
Less. I mean, I wouldn't
get him out, but it's more like, oh, hey, you know, you're thinking it's more, because what you said, it was more like fire rope, like it was like the fire hobby type stuff.
No, I've never seen the word fire, just that maybe the game's passed up rope.
Yeah,
I don't agree with that talk at all. I think rope's still a good coach.
He's a good coach, but I feel like it's just like he doesn't have the hitting coach to complement it. Like once Deggs left, there's not necessarily like a whole lot of power to it. Like Deggs was a big part of the offensive like outburst they had in that run a couple years ago.
Oh, for sure. He was a great hitting coach, and he's having a pretty good year at
Sam Houston State. I mean, dude, Sam Houston State's been on another level, brother. Like they are a team that could wind up being like one of the more consistent teams out of the Southland. To wind up,
I know
like
they had a rough go. Was it last year they had a rough go? But outside of that, they've been.
Like I said, I mean, they've been able to get into the college, into the tournament, like, get into the NCAA Division I baseball tournament. That's what you want if you're a like
that level. That's
yeah, exactly. You're Southland Conference. We can go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Maybe we'll do some buying and selling. We shall see. Yarko Equipment Highline open 337-706-0111. We'll have Raven Parch the third on as well at 11 o'clock. You're listening to the producers on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
It's the LSU Fighting Tiger Watch Party starting Friday at 12 noon live at Marley Sports Bar in downtown Lafayette. The doors will open at 11 a.m. with happy hour drink specials all day long. Grab your friend, put on your purple and gold, and join the team at Marley's for the official LSU Fighting Tiger Watch Party, Marley style. The game starts at noon. The doors open at 11 at Marley Sports Bar on Jefferson in downtown Lafayette.
Your Saturday morning never truly gets started until the producers take over the airwaves.
Like it or not?
Not.
We are taking over.
Now let's get back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. A little flip the script here, changing some things up, and that is, instead of talking to LSU baseball in the last segment with Wilson Alexander, we're going to do that right now, go over to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to talk with our guy Wilson Alexander of the Baton Rouge Advocate. What's going on, Wilson?
Nothing too much, I guess. That's not quite right. St. Patrick's Day stuff happening around here. Sorry that I missed out on that last segment. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, man, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you wanting to come on the show, my man, because we got a lot to talk about with LSU baseball. Obviously, the doubleheader today. You know, what's the biggest thing that you're looking forward to in this doubleheader? Obviously, Zach Hess, he's still going to be on the mound for game one of this doubleheader. What do you think about the matchup against a fellow Zach and Zach Thompson?
Yeah, that's going to be a great, great pitching duel between those two guys. Zach Hess is going to have his hands full a little bit there, just, you know, throwing good pitches, because LSU's going to have a tough time putting the bat on the ball. Thompson's a great pitcher at Kentucky, and so it's kind of disappointing that we didn't get that in more of an electric environment last night, but it should still be a really good game between those two. And then I'm also excited to watch Cole Henry today to see how he pitches, because the way he throws could really go a long way to determining LSU's weekend rotation.
With LSU kind of beat up as far as the pitching staff is, you know, just battling injury after injury, who are some of the arms you think they're going to rely on this weekend out of the bullpen?
Out of the bullpen, I guess you're probably looking at Trent Vitmire, Todd Peterson, Mikhail Hilliard would be a guy that could be available, Matthew Beck maybe. Yes, you're right. They're so banged up right now on that pitching staff. It looks like they're inching toward stability and health, but they're still getting there.
Talk right now with Wilson Alexander of the Baton Rouge Advocate. And, you know, you brought up earlier about the hitting hasn't necessarily been there. What's been the biggest thing that's kind of hurt this hitting, this rotation, the starting lineup? Because I feel like they have all the potential to do so. Obviously, with Antoine Duplantis, Chris Reed, hashtag professional hitter, getting things done, it just seems like it's been tough to see this offense, like, really be effective.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you look at the lineup, like, you know, I was looking at it yesterday before the game, and most of the guys are batting, like, at least 290 or so in the lineup. I mean, and you compare it to the teams in the SEC, and it's really good, but they're not – it's just not happening at the same time, I guess. Like, the top of the lineup will hit really well one day, but the bottom of the lineup won't. And so I don't know what the reason is behind it not all coming together right one time against good teams, because they've done it against, you know, lesser competition, but they just haven't hit 1 through 9 – really in a game against like a really quality opponent yet, and I'm not really sure why.
Especially when you look at that game on a Tuesday night up against Nicholls State, where they just could not get anything done. Like I said, it's very hit or miss. I mean, what's kind of your expectation for this weekend up against, especially when you look at that matchup, you brought up Zach Thompson, and then one of the other studs, I'd say Grant, I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, Grant Maciachi. 1-0 with a 1.32 ERA. That's going to be game two of that doubleheader.
Yeah. I mean, well, first, you know, because Northwestern State on Tuesday, they kind of ran into – it's interesting. One of the other LSU beat writers, James Moran at Tiger Rag, has this theory kind of that they just have a tough time against slower pitching, and that's what they ran into against Northwestern State because they're used to guys throwing 95. And the guy at Northwestern State was throwing 85. And their timing was off, and they didn't adjust to it well. So I think they'll actually be better suited in an SEC series to hit because they're used to seeing 95 off the mound. But they will still have a tough time because the quality of pitching will be pretty high.
Another big story this year is how LSU kind of struggled handling base runners. Kentucky's a different kind of Kentucky team that we've seen recently where they swiped quite a few bags so far this year. How's LSU going to limit that and slow down Kentucky on the base paths?
Right, so that's something that they've been working on a lot this week out of their practice on, I think it was Wednesday, and Brock Mathis was working for a couple extra minutes just on his pop, trying to get that ball down to second faster. They had a meeting, I believe it was Tuesday morning, just to kind of try to figure this stuff out. You know, Paul Maneri said it's everything, and it's everybody's responsibility. The pitchers have got to be faster at the plate. They're trying. Right now, their time to the plate's like 1.4, 1.5, and they needed to get down to 1.3, that Kess was saying. They've been working on that in their side work. You know, they need to vary their looks. They need to call some pitch outs, keep Kentucky kind of, and, you know, hesitating, in order to keep them, it's been an issue for LSU this year.
All right. Well, so we got about 30 seconds left. I want to kind of talk about more about like the vibe going around LSU right now. In terms of baseball, because obviously Paul Maneri, his father, Damian Maneri, passed away hours before first pitch on Wednesday in that midweek matchup. What's kind of the vibe right now over at LSU?
I listen to Paul having that.
What a perfect time for like a phone line to just be like less than ideal. And cut out in the final moments. It was rough. But I appreciate Wilson Alexander for coming on. You can follow him over on the Twitter machine, I believe, at @WHAlexander_.
Yeah, and Paul Maneri, man, you know, prayers and thoughts with him and his family. His dad, just Hall of Fame coach, and he's been big influence on Coach Maneri. He coached
and
the
all that college baseball. Yeah, all this is a big, like, recently. JUCO guy.
And how about, you know, Coach Maneri going out and coaching the day of his father's death and –
Well, I think he was just more like in the dugout. He didn't necessarily. It was more. I think it was more like Alan Dunn and everybody kind of pitching in, because I know Alan Dunn handled the pregame and postgame stuff. I think he was just more there because I'm certain like his father would have wanted him just to be there.
I mean, he was coaching kids up. They showed him in the dugout, coaching guys up. So, you know, big ups to him and thoughts and prayers with his family. And as you know, they lost a great member.
Funeral arrangements, I believe, are going to be set for Monday.
Okay.
According to what I saw. Yeah, after the series. But also, it's like it typically would be like around that time. When you think about it, passing away on like Wednesday afternoon, hours before first pitch, is a sad story.
Yeah, it's sad, man. 90 years old, lived a good life and
a full life.
Gave a whole lot to the game of college baseball.
He gave a whole lot to the game of college baseball. And I say Wilson Alexander gave us a lot of insight on the world of college baseball when you look at the LSU Tigers. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Come back top of the hour. We got to have on our guy, Raymond Parch III, RP3. Talk to him about some LSU basketball things on the hard way. Get it done. And then we're going to come back with more. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on 103.7thegame.com and on the 103.7 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Shoots. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
I heard you missed us. We're back.
Oh, hell yeah.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Hour two of two is now underway. Oh, hell yeah. And we got to go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline with some quickness to go out to Nashville, Tennessee for the SEC Tournament coverage, unlike any other, with our guy, RP3, Raymond Parch III. What is going on, good brother? Hey, Raymond, you there?
Out there in Nashville. I'm just out here in Nashville, man. And I think it's been a rough morning for the LSU faithful, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I can about imagine there's a little bit of hair of the dog going on in Nashville, Tennessee right about now with everything that happened yesterday. Again, with the LSU Tigers dropping a tough one to Tennessee Florida, after a very, very questionable call towards the end of that ball game.
Yeah, the call played a role in that. You're talking about the 6-point swing.
Yes.
World famous, where Skylar Mays put down a powerful dunk. I want to say it was his first dunk since the Memphis game. And they get ball, and LSU and just kind of brought the crowd to its feet. And then Florida comes down and shoots a fairly quick 3-pointer. And there was a foul called on Naz Reid off the ball. Not associated with the shooter, and there was some confusion there if they're going to count the three, should they count the three. And then during that time, Coach got livid because he was like, well, if he counted the three, then he shouldn't be shooting two free throws and everything like this. And during that time, he got teed up. He should not have been teed up. There's, you know, you look back at it, I've looked at the video now since then, he shouldn't have been teed up. That played a role. That was a big 6-point swing. But that being said, they let Florida shoot nearly 60% in the second half. They had a 10-point lead at halftime. They had a 13-point lead in the second half. And they let Florida shoot nearly 60% in the second half. There's no reason why LSU did not put them away. They just did not execute the way they should. That play was huge. I'm not saying it's not. But they still had time after that, and they still tied the game, and it still became a back-and-forth game after that. They just did not execute like they needed to, and their defense, inexplicably, after holding Florida to, I think, 34% shooting from the field in the first half, they just got abused by the Gators in the second half, and that was the difference in the game to me.
Our guy Ken called up and he said, look, he's ready to put the Will Wade talk to bed. But you just can't help but to think if Will Wade was there on the bench, that he would have made a difference, especially in the back half of that game. LSU's been so good at winning games late and close games that he would have made a difference.
I would agree with that with you, Blaine. And here's the other thing about that. I don't think Will Wade, a lot of us in the media talked about this, I don't think Will would have got the tee. I just don't. I've seen Will Wade behave a lot worse. I've seen him say a lot of, you know, a lot more things. I've seen him yell a lot more about calls and not get that. And Coach even said it afterwards. He was like, you know, interim coaches aren't going to get calls. But he owned up to it. He said, you know, I shouldn't have got the tee. But I agree with you that there was times in the second half, particularly around the eight-minute mark down, that there was a couple possessions and a couple sequences that went on maybe about 8 to 10 seconds too long, like where you could go, hey, here's a time to take a timeout. And I think the steady hand of Will's and knowing how to manage those late-game situations was missing. But I will say this. When you talk to the young guys afterwards, and they provided us with Javonte Smart, which I was surprised by, and also Naz Reid, so your two freshmen stars, and they bring them out to the podium and they ask them about Coach, like, they're moving forward without Will Wade, like, which I think is the best thing for this team, because they're like, Coach is our coach right now, you know, and we have to come together as a team, we have to come together as a family, and it is very businesslike. It was very much kind of they've already kind of resigned to themselves that they're not going to have Will Wade and they can't sit there and whine about it and they have to move forward without him.
With that being said, I mean, with all the outside noise and all the Will Wade saga going one and done in the SEC tournament, now you turn your head to the NCAA tournament. Like, where's this team's psyche? How do they feel? Is the confidence level there at this point?
You know, you can't I think the confidence level is still there because they can still know the fact that they beat Kentucky and they beat Tennessee, right? And so they still have – they beat – you know, Coach mentioned it in the postgame presser that they beat St. Mary's, who then ended up, you know, winning their conference, beating Gonzaga, you know, perennial national contender, Final Four contender. That being said, I think it gets a lot tougher. You know, some projections – Blaine have them, you know, they're going to drop to a 3 seed, I do believe. I don't think they're going to be a 2. I think they're going to be a 3. And I think they're going to be stuck, you know, if you're LSU, what's going to happen if you get, let's say, a 3 seed and you're in the portion of a bracket with a Duke or North Carolina? You know, that's, you know, or even a Kentucky again. I mean, that's going to be your reward. They had an opportunity. If they would have won yesterday, Blaine, they would have got a 2 seed. I firmly believe that if they would have just reached the semifinals of their conference tournament, they would be a 2 seed. But they lost to Florida again for the second time. I mean,
but
this
is
Florida
just a bad matchup for LSU?
It's the way they play their defense. It's that 1-1-2 that they play, and they know they're undersized in certain positions, and LSU has matchup, you know, has the favorable matchups, but the defense kind of slows them down. I was surprised, but here's the thing. The first two matchups, the games were close at halftime, like 2 points or 3 points, and LSU could not attack in the paint. Well, yesterday, they come right out, and they attack in the paint. Like, they just – there's a sequence of, like, 4 or 5 slam dunks in a row. They just went right after Florida with Naz Reid and Big B. Williams and Marlon Taylor doing high-flying dunks. They went right after them. And in the second half, they didn't. Like, they got away from it. They got out of their rhythm. Look, Florida plays top-notch defense. That's what Mike White is known for, playing the head coach. He's in his fourth year. This is what he does. They play very good defense. They have some nice players that are freshmen, you know, but they have a lot of undersized guys, and they're not the biggest. That's the reason why they've lost 14 games. They play defense, and that defense keeps them in the game. I was stunned yesterday, and we all were, by the fact that this Florida team, with all its offensive woes, was able to score 51 points in the second half against LSU, like 51. And that was the huge difference to me. It was they played such good defense in that first half, and then Florida just started lighting them up on the three, attacking the paint. And LSU just got a little sloppy with the execution. Coached it afterwards. They got sluggish in the second half. Well, how do you get sluggish in the second half of your first game of the tournament? Florida's coming off playing a game the day before. So I was a little perplexed by that.
Yeah, I have to agree, Raymond. That was definitely one of the big things. that I think a lot of us were perplexed about was the fact that it was like just a rough ending to the ball game up against a team, like you said, that had the day that played the day before, and now they're getting ready for a semifinal matchup up against Auburn. What are the games you're looking forward to this weekend in the SEC tournament?
Well, and this is no offense to, you know, Auburn and Florida, the battle, you know, of teams with blue and, you know, teams with, you know, the orange in their jerseys. The game the game that the city of Nashville is amped up for is Kentucky-Tennessee. I mean, that's now you're going to be, everyone's going to anticipate whoever wins that game is going to win the SEC tournament. Let me tell you, walking around Nashville, I've never seen so many people dressed in blue in my entire damn life, man. Like, it's just Kentucky folks have taken over the city of Nashville. They are everywhere.
I was over in Houston for the Final Four when they made it the year UConn won the national championship with Kemba Walker. And the amount of Kentucky fans was just insane. And they stayed after Kentucky lost, and every bar and restaurant you went into was just jam-packed with Wildcats.
Man, we went places. I couldn't spot you LSU people last night around Nashville. When we went out, we had having a good time. Couldn't find you an LSU person except for media folks that cover LSU. That was it. But it was nothing but Kentucky and Tennessee folks. They just taking over. But yeah, the Kentucky-Tennessee matchup, you know, they've already played twice before. You know, one team curb stomped the other, and they returned the favor. This is the rubber match. They hate each other. The Bridgestone Arena is going to be electric tonight for those two teams when they take the court. They're the late game. The early game, the one coming up at noon, is going to be the Florida versus Auburn game, which is intriguing because I thought for LSU that when they did get seeded and they got the one seed, that it was going to be a tall task for them because not only were they going to have to face a team that had already beat them once before, whether it was Arkansas or Florida, then more than likely they're going to have to play a good Auburn team who is trending in the right direction towards the end of the season. And Bruce Pearl, even with all his baggage, and he's got a whole aircraft carrier of it, he knows how to coach. So I was like, well, yeah, they're going to have to probably face Florida and then Auburn and then the winner of Kentucky-Tennessee. I mean, that just goes to show you how good the SEC is. That matchup, that Florida-Auburn matchup, could be a good game. But, look, the star power, it's going to be Kentucky versus Tennessee. That's what the town's talking about.
Oh, without a doubt. It's a lot like what we saw in the ACC tournament last night with Duke-UNC. But before I let you go, you were talking about going out on the town last night in Nashville, Tennessee. I saw a lot of media members hit up bar lines. Was that what you posted up at last night?
No, we went to a spot where it was called something Kung Fu. It was a sports bar, but it had nothing but like old school, vintage arcade games.
Oh,
like
nice.
Galaga and like Miss Pac-Man and like NFL Blitz and Double Dragon. So we had that, and then we went to this other spot that was kind of more of a low key, a tavern right down the street. Yeah. But we had a good time, and of course we hit the big landmark for dinner, Hattie B's. Had to go there with the hot chicken. It was tremendous. It was worth it exceeds all the hype that everyone has around it. So, yeah, we had ourselves a nice time. Nashville exceeded my expectations. Let's just say that.
Raymond, thanks for coming on, my man. Enjoy Nashville, and I'd say also enjoy the Louisiana Open next week.
Appreciate it, brother.
Yeah. Not a problem, guys. Y'all have a good one.
All right, that was Raymond Parsha, third. Oops, you can follow him on Twitter at RP3Sports. Turn my own mic off, man.
Hey, that's what some of a kid in has been asking for a long time.
Shut up, Blaine. We're going to take a quick commercial break, come back with more. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. For this segment, and probably the last segment we'll be able to do this, have the ARCO Equipment Hotline wide open, 706-0111. You can chat us up about anything and everything because we got a lot to talk about. We can talk about a lot of things, so call us up right now, 706-0111.
It's whole lot going on when it comes to baseball in the area. UL Raging Cajuns, LSU Tigers. Then you got New Orleans Saints free agency, SEC basketball tournaments, NCAA basketball tournament.
Coming up, you know, we got the big bracket reveal coming up tomorrow, the bracket reveal watch party as well over at Pete's on Johnson. The fun starts at 5. Ben will be out there a little bit early. Hell, I might be there a little bit early to enjoy some of the St. Patty's Day festivities, and more importantly, enjoy some college basketball, see where the LSU Tigers are going to wind up. I'm sure I'm going to ask Greg Peterson about that, where he thinks they'll wind up. Raymond Parsha III thinks they're going to be a 3 seed. I wouldn't be surprised, but we're going to get an opinion from our guy Greg Peterson, a guy who knows bracketology pretty damn well.
Yeah, you could even get there a little bit earlier and take in some of the college basketball tournament finals and conference tournament finals.
She'd have to be there like early, man, because isn't like the SEC final like going on tomorrow at like
– Yeah, but I want to say like 11 a.m. 10 and ACC or later.
Yeah, well, the ACC, I think that's going on tonight, right? Yeah, yeah.
It's final for ACC tonight?
I believe so. Okay. I believe so. Oh, yeah, so yeah, it's about the final tonight, the ACC tournament. That's 7:30. Duke, Florida State.
Florida State's hot, man.
Yeah, they're ridiculously hot.
You know, the only team Florida State lost to, like, in the last 12 has been North Carolina, correct?
Your guess is as good as mine, because I cannot tell you.
They're hot right now. They beat a Virginia team that's been awfully good all season long.
That's the biggest thing, though, is you need to be able to have, like, a team be hot, but you're going to be running into a brick wall in Zion Williamson and his, like, triumphant return to basketball. He's
such a good college basketball
player. Dude is just a monster. I mean, I think he's going to be a phenomenal pro player as well. The dude just...
I'm not there yet, man.
He's got the body, and, like, the dude...
He does, though?
Yeah,
does he?
He's got the body, and it's like...
Does he? He has the body to play inside, but he's only, what, 6'8"?
But here's the thing. Like, he's got the body, but it also has that, like, freakish ability. The dude was, like, you saw the dunk he had, like, in the Syracuse game?
The one where he took 5 steps?
Dude, where he just, like, flew up there. Dude was getting up there, man. Like,
no, he could jump. He's a great athlete.
I think he's got this freakish ability.
He could be a good player in the NBA. As far as, like, a generational type guy, I don't think so.
I think he can be. I think he can be a generational talent. The dude is just a absolute beast, and I can't think of anybody else that is going to be part of this draft class in 2019 for the NBA draft that's going to wind up being one of those guys. It's hard for me to say
now. I'm telling you, he's going to be a good basketball player in the NBA.
Yeah. Is it more because, like, in your mind, it's because of the current way the NBA is set up where it's a lot softer? You're like, you can't necessarily go as hard as you used to.
I don't think he's kind of a tweener in size.
But that's what I'm saying.
He doesn't have much of an outside. I mean, he has a little bit of an outside game, but not much.
But yeah, I guess
it's a funky release.
You put him on a team that has like a guy.
I mean, his deal is just his athleticism, right? Outstanding.
But at the end of the day, I think that's really what you need if you're an NBA team.
He's Blake Griffin 2.0 for me. Good NBA player, all star, generational guy. Not so much.
But he's going to be a guy that can help you get a lot more wins, right?
Good player, yes, yeah. Good player.
Yeah, so basically you're saying he's going to be part of the Cleveland Cavaliers because they're getting the first pick. I'm telling you guys, the conspiracy is in. It's been in place. I've told you this for months, that the Cleveland Cavaliers are getting the number one pick. Everybody's saying, oh, the New York Knicks. No.
I think it's going to be the Knicks.
I think it's going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers because it's the conspiracy theory of, for whatever reason, the Cleveland Cavaliers –
Yeah, but I mean,
get the first pick right after LeBron leaves.
Bigger market you have than New York City, man.
Oh, trust me. I agree wholeheartedly. But it just always feels like Cleveland gets the benefit of the doubt post-LeBron. Didn't the same thing happen against whenever he left Miami? They got Kyrie Irving, all these like number one picks. He's a lot of just gaming the system, if you will. It's a lot like the Orlando Magic as well in the 90s. They wound up having a lot of luck in those NBA draft lotteries to where they wind up getting some solid number one picks, including Shaq.
Penny Hardaway.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who's now coaching, which is weird but awesome.
It's crazy. They're going to pull all kind of talent to Memphis.
Dude. You know they are, and then they'll get investigated.
Everybody in the NCAA, right?
Oh, trust me. I think it's just like you're opening up the books at this point and be like, you know what?
Let them go pro if they want out of high school, but once they come to college, make them stay 3 years and have some kind of minor league organization in all sports. works in baseball.
I mean, you kind of do have one, really, in the G League, in the NBA. You already have one in place. It's just you're not using it
as such.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're not using it like a... Like you're
Would baseball have just work?
What?
The way baseball handles stuff, didn't it just work?
It works extremely well. I think that's probably the best thing about baseball is the farm system. You could say the same thing about the NHL, but I feel like the MLB works it at an extremely good level. The NFL could wind up having some in place. I think now that the AAF has proven itself to be a little bit more successful in the past couple of months since the season started, I think they've shown themselves to be a viable product, but it's like you know that there's a lower level to the play. I mean, you see Zach Mettenberger look really good. That's a great thing.
Cleveland needs to sign that guy up quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Wait, what?
The Browns, they need to sign Zach.
No. I understand.
To back up.
I understand where you're coming from, but Baker's
the
Baker.
The backup Baker for sure. Baker's a dog.
Yeah, like I said, I'd much rather him go to Miami, be a starter right out of the gate. Because who else are they going to start? Really, they got two guys that are complete jabrones. So yeah, I'd much rather him be in Miami than.
Okay.
And like I said, I would love to see an all LSU team one day, but I just can't see it right now. I can't see what wind up happening. I mean, we already have a wide receivers coach from LSU.
Adam Henry's out there. Adam Henry's out there. And Odell.
Odell. Dude. I was going to use this for buying and selling, but we might as well just bring it up now. Do you think, the Browns can at least win the AFC North? I'm saying they can wind up going to the Super Bowl.
I think with this offense, they're one of the top five contenders in the AFC right now.
I mean, their odds, went up, all the way up, man. It was ridiculous to see how much, numbers they wound up getting in terms of the odds. I think it's, 8-1 now to win the AFC.
I mean, you got Nick Chubb, a guy who was coming on at the end of next year running the football.
Kareem Hunt is only out
Only 8 games. Odell and Jarvis,
Odell, Jarvis, David, and Njoku, got that guy. You got, a lot of talent all the way around. It's ridiculous.
I think this is a team that's going to contend for a conference championship.
And I think that thing is ridiculous to think about. This is a franchise that has been just an absolute joke for the last, few years.
You can see so many people rocking Browns jerseys. And
I can't wait. I can't wait. Amazing. I was saying this. I'm a big proponent of having new blood, having new blood instead of having the same, 8 teams make the playoffs every year, same Super Bowl every year. Or, if you're looking at the NBA, the same NBA championship every year for the last, 5 years with LeBron James involved in it. Just give me new blood so I can enjoy.
You think you're going to get that in the NBA this year?
Hell no. We're going to see. We're at least half of it. We're going to wind up seeing the Golden State Warriors in it.
Yeah, for sure.
And then maybe the Boston Celtics.
I hope somebody else.
It's a reach. But still, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with the NBA playoffs this year. A lot more than I have been in the past, but it just still feels like we're just talking about hypotheticals and we're just waiting to see what's going to happen, what the next shoe to drop is going to be in the NBA. But I'm saying, I just love seeing new blood.
New things, man. That's why everybody's so excited about the Browns.
Cleveland is a fresh coat of paint, and finally they have a consistent quarterback because they can finally get rid of that jersey that has 50,000 names on it.
Baker's a dog.
It's fantastic stuff. Got to take a quick commercial break and have a fantastic conversation with our guy, Greg Peterson. Let's talk some college hoops. We'll be back with more on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Face the winner of number 4 Kentucky.
You've heard the host takes all week. Saturday mornings are for the producers. Now back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody. The world of college basketball is a battlefield filled with potential landmines as we get to the month of March. Thank goodness we have Greg Peterson embracing all of the madness with the producers.
And it is time to embrace the madness. Well, kind of. We're going to call him up in just a minute because I know the man is busy doing some college basketball coverage for VSiN, our guy covering college basketball, unlike anybody else, that at least that I know of. The dude is ridiculous when it comes to it. We'll break down some of the conference matchups, underdogs to watch for in the bracket, because I'll give you some deets about that in a little bit. And hey, guess what? We can give you the full Monty when it comes to the conference tournament finals involving Power 5 conferences, where certain teams can land, or a whole lot more. What do you think about it, Blaine? This will be fun.
I mean, is Duke playing for a number one seed today?
Yes.
That would be my assumption. Outside of that, I think they might be pretty much locked up. We're going to get all the scoop in just a second from Greg Peterson. But I think LSU's probably looking at a three seed, maybe a chance at a four, depending on how everything shakes out. But I think the brackets is getting close to being set. I think it's pretty wide open this year. I think you got teams that could make deep runs that are going to be seeded, you know, 3 to 4 seeds if they get hot. I mean, I think Kentucky's a team that's trending very upward. This North Carolina team is just about as hot as anybody in the country right now, and it's not really even close. I know they lost last night, but, man, that game was just a battle. We talked about it in the break. That was just so fun to watch last night.
Yeah, in fact, they're replaying it right now on Stadium right behind me. So
yeah,
I'm able
watching
to kinda,
it.
It's just fantastic. Able to rewatch it. Mind you, not a whole lot of college basketball going on of note right now. I know a lot of the more marquee ball games will be going on in about another 20 minutes or so. But now we go over to the Arco Equipment Hotline to talk about that guy. Greg Peterson, what is going on, good brother?
Not too much. How about you, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. Mind you, a lot less kind of cluster of news going on right now involving the LSU Tigers. Obviously, we got to kind of, if we want to talk about that, we got to start things off looking at last night's LSU, or yesterday afternoon, excuse me, LSU and Florida. What a competitive ball game that was.
It certainly was. You saw both these teams being able to hit some dagger shots down the stretch, obviously. Florida was able to pull it out with that big three with the waning seconds of the game. But with that said, I thought that it was very good to see Javonte Smartpak out there on the floor for LSU. You have to like what you saw out of him. Nas Reed was very good in this game. But what was my big takeaway with Florida is this is a team that's really heating up with their three-point shooting. This is a team that has really relied on that shot all year long. They've been a little bit hit or miss. But the fact that they're now getting some big production out of Jalen Hudson, a guy that this year had really been underwhelming before the SEC tournament and before the last, I would say, 2 weeks of February, has to bode well for the Gators.
And, Greg, you know, we got to talk, obviously, about LSU and where they can wind up being with their seeding, because it seems like a lot of guys could wind up downvoting them to a three seed. Where do you think they'll be right here, right now?
I think they probably will be a three seed just because the whole coaching situation probably takes them a little bit out of the running for a two seed. That is obviously a little bit of a wolf for this team. And let's be honest here, the interim coaching for LSU was not great in that game against Florida. You could actually make the case that the coaching might have actually cost them that game. It was not very good. Will Wade, just a mastermind when it comes to this team. You do have to downgrade LSU a little bit because they do not have Wade out there on the sideline.
I'd have to agree with you talking right now with Greg Peterson, our college basketball expert. And if they wind up winning that game against Florida, and probably even if it was like a last-second three-pointer to get the win to advance, would that want to wind up getting them that two-seed regardless of all the behind-the-scenes stuff?
It would have been very interesting because I feel like if they would have won that game and then they would have at the very least been competitive in a game against Auburn, who Florida is playing today, I do think that they probably would have gotten a two-seed. I do feel like the loss pretty much entrenches them into that three line because you got to think that whoever wins this Tennessee versus Kentucky game, likely going to be getting a one, and whoever loses this game, likely going to be getting a two-seed. And with everything else that's going on in the ACC, the Big Ten, and everything like that, I just think that LSU is going to be left out in this game of musical chairs, I guess you could say, with the seed, and they're going to get a three.
And, Greg, we got to move over talking some more of the notable games going on this weekend. Obviously, you kind of led a horse to water here when you talk about the SEC and Florida-Auburn. We might as well start off with that, with Florida taking on the Auburn Tigers, 12 o'clock tip. Auburn currently a 3.5-point favorite. Where do you think this one's going to wind up going? Because I feel like Florida, right now, they're getting hot at the right time, and they play a tough game with the tempo and whatnot.
You mentioned the game with the spread of 3.5. What I actually look to a little bit more is a total. I'm seeing this between 133 and 134, and this makes absolutely no sense to me. Auburn is a team that really likes to play up and down. You've got so many guys that are able to hit threes. Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, they combine to average over 30 points out there in the backcourt. Both these guys shoot just under 40% from three. We see Malik Dunbar come into the starting lineup and give the team right around 8 points per game. You've got Samir Dowdy, who comes off the bench and shoots nearly 40% from three. Austin Wiley actually saw a couple minutes for Auburn in their game a couple days ago, so he's starting to see a couple minutes for the team. But you do have Anthony McLemore and Chuma Okeke as well. for Florida. I mentioned the fact that Jalen Hudson has been coming out for this team. You've got Kavarius Hayes down low, able to give this team right around 6 rebounds. And then Kayvon Allen does a good job of being able to hit some threes as well. I think that Auburn probably wins this game for 5 or 6. I'm laying the points here with Auburn, but what I really like even more is this total over.
All right, now we're going to move over to the Big Ten semifinal matchup. Number 19th-ranked Wisconsin up against 6th-ranked Michigan State. Sparty currently 5.5-point favorites. I'm going to lean personally towards Wisconsin here. Where are you leaning here?
I am on Wisconsin, and I am on Wisconsin winning outright. We did see Nick Ward return to the lineup yesterday for 14 minutes for Michigan State. But with that said, I think that Michigan State is going to have a tough time matching up with Ethan Happ, guy that averages 17.5 points, over 10 rebounds. He's able to be the team's leader in assists. He just fills it up in all capacities for Wisconsin. Nick Ward is still not looking like his full self. And then the other fear that you have with Michigan State is the fact that they do turn the ball over quite a bit. Now, they do have a guy that does a very good job of being able to go off the ball and cash his wins. Shoots 40% for 3, 18 points per game. But because he has the ball in his hands so much, he is prone to having a very bad game in regards to having some turnovers. We saw that when they lost to Illinois. He had 9 turnovers in that game. And you've got a very good and stout defensive unit in Wisconsin that has a bunch of good guards that are able to shoot threes, like Demetri Trice, like Brad Davison, a guy that once took 6 charges in a game earlier this year against NC State. I lean to the Badgers, and I think their defense is going to allow them to win this game outright.
Talking right now with Greg Peterson, our college basketball expert. And, you know, you talk about the Wisconsin game. I just want to make sure. This isn't because of the fact that you went to Wisconsin Oshkosh, right? You're not just pulling it for Wisco just for the sake of Wisco, right?
Oh, no, not at all. If I would be biased on one thing, it's the fact that UW Oshkosh is now in the D3 national championship game. You
nice.
Know I'm taking them on the money line, regardless of what that number is.
I love it, Greg. I love it. Moving over to the other SEC semifinal matchup going on today, the one that I think everybody's looking forward to, Tennessee-Kentucky, the Wildcats, 1.5-point favorite. And either one of these teams probably winds up winning the SEC. Do they wind up getting the one seed? Because it feels like it's either going to be Tennessee or Kentucky at this point.
Like I said, I do think that this is actually going to be a game for a one seed. I think loser gets a 2 seed, winner gets a 1 seed. And I do think that Tennessee is going to be able to pull it out in this game. They do have more experience in regards to just their roster in general. I do like the way that Grant Williams is able to get to the free throw line. We all remember what he did when they went to overtime and were able to beat Vanderbilt. I believe he was either 21 of 21 or 22 of 22 at the free throw line. Guy's absolutely sensational at being able to get there. Admiral Schofield just in 16 points. And we've really seen some improved play out of Jordan Bone. He's hitting some threes for this team. He has an assist or turnover ratio of 3. You take a look on the other side for Kentucky, you just don't know what you're going to get as much out of Tyler Hero, who has been playing better down the stretch, but he still has a little bit of a question mark. And then you've got Keldon Johnson, who does a good job of being a pulling rebounds. Not so great of a shooter. Reed Travis being back in the lineup obviously helps out Kentucky, but I do feel like guys like Alexander and company down low, we're going to be able to keep him and C.J. Washington at bay. I do look at Tennessee on the money line here.
Talking right now with Greg Peterson, our college basketball expert. And we got to look at one more game coming up tonight, and that is 7:30 tip. Florida State, red-hot Florida State at that. They're heading into some incredible form in the ACC tournament final up against Zion Williamson and the Blue Devils of Duke. Currently Duke, an 8-point favorite in this one. Could Florida State wind up coming out with a surprise win here in your mind?
I don't know if Florida State's going to be able to win this game all right, but I'm certainly going to take the point. Duke is a team that for the year shoots right around 320th in regards to 353 teams in three-point shooting percentage. Zion Williamson is absolutely sensational. In his 2 games back, he's won 26 of 33 from the floor. He has done it all for the team, but what are you going to get out of Cam Reddish? What are you going to get out of R.J. Barrett? That's a big question to me. And you also take a look at this total. I'm seeing it as high as like 147.5 to 75. The most profitable thing in regards to Duke game so far this year has been taking the under. Of every team that is on the regular Vegas betting board, more unders have been going to Duke's way than any other team in college basketball. That has been a hot trend all year long. Florida State playing some sensational defense. They gave up 59 points to Virginia. in a game in overtime against Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech was not able to get to 65 points. I think that this is going to be a grind-em-out game that's going to be played right around the 65, 66 style range. I think that Florida State doesn't necessarily win this game, but I think they're able to hang in like a 68 to 62 style game. So I'm taking the points in the under here with Florida State.
I like that a lot, Greg. And now we're going to move over to the world of bracketology for a minute, because I just want to get your thoughts on what team right now that's punched their ticket, or at least you think is going to wind up being in the field of 64. I'm not counting those playing games. It's a whole different story for a whole different day. But which one of those teams do you think could wind up being a real nuisance once the tournament gets started?
You certainly do have to look at Murray State. They've got a guy that's able to take over the game in John Morant. He averages for the year nearly 24 points per game, over 10 assists. He shoots very well from three-point range as well. This is a guy that's really able to fill it up. A team that's not necessarily going to be a lower seed, but I feel like could make a run into the second week of the tournament that not a lot of people are talking about is Wofford. This is a squad that has four guys that shoot over 40% from three. Fletcher McGee is able to give this team over 20 points per game. Really love what he's able to do. He's got a very complete game. So I do think that those are a pair of teams that are a little bit off the beaten path that you have to look at. If you're looking for one of those double-digit seeds, like a 14 seed that might be able to pull off an upset, how about Colgate? Colgate has a point guard in Jordan Burns that averages 16 points, nearly six assists, shoots 40% from three. They've got a bunch of versatile big men that are able to shoot over 40% from three. This is a Colgate team that nearly went on the road against Penn State earlier this year. This Colgate team out there in the Patriot League, just time and time again, scores 80 points, and yet they do a very good job on the defensive end as well. The Colgate Raiders might be worth a look if you're looking for one of those big, giant upsets.
Greg, thanks so much, my man, for coming on all throughout the season. I'll give you a break during the madness of March because I think we can break it down just perfectly fine here in the 237 Roof Studios. Greg, once again, appreciate you having you on for, I believe, the third straight season I've had you on. You always bring the heat. Can't wait to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
All right, that was Greg Peterson. You can follow him on Twitter at GUnit_81. And the man got you covered when it comes to spreads. Dude covers it like nobody else.
Oh, man, if you don't follow this guy on Twitter, you need to jump on it right now. If you're into that gambling thing, he lays it down each and every day.
Like tons of them.
Oh, man, he picks so many games and point versus the spread and over-unders. It's
and money
amazing.
Lines.
It's amazing.
I mean, the dude just said he'd put money line on a Division III NCAA title game. That's impressive. But I was talking about bracketology and talking about which teams could wind up being an underdog pulling off the upset. One has been a 16 seed, so there's that going for you, which is really nice. But I wanted to kind of do that because guess what? Starting Sunday, you'll get the bracket reveal. We'll have the bracket reveal watch party going on at Pete's. But also, you can go to 1037thegame.com, enter in right now, just get yourself set up, ready to go for Sunday. He's going to be spending some time. I hope you do it Sunday. If you do it Monday, it is what it is. Make sure you sign up before Thursday, before all the games get tipped off, and fill out that bracket on 1037thegame.com. You can just go to 1037thegame.com. It'll be on their feature slide. You'll be able to check that out. And make sure you get in on that action because you can wind up making some awesome stuff work. And, hey, if you have an absolutely perfect bracket, this has never happened before. It's a low percentage. But guess what? Like Lloyd Christmas, there's a chance that you can wind up getting it. So you're saying there's a chance? Yes, that is true. You have a chance to wind up being $1 million richer with the Pete's $1 million Bracket Challenge. You check this out at 1037thegame.com. And mind you, even if we don't get a perfect bracket in this lineup, the best bracket of them all wins $1,000 in cold hard cash. So no matter what, somebody walking away with some cash money. And we got to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Come back with more. Wrap up of the show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Let's get back to the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports show, The Producers, with Blaine, Clint, and Cody on 103.7 The Game.
Let's begin now.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And we're going to have a good day today, as it is a Saturday. We got LSU baseball doubleheader going down, starting at 2 o'clock, pregame 1:30, right here on 103.7 The Game. You'll hear all of that action. We all about that action, boss.
It's going to be a great weekend, man. I plan on watching a whole bunch of sports.
How can you not? You
Tigers
know?
Baseball, going to catch some hoops action.
Yep.
We're going to have a fantasy baseball draft in the time of the bracket reveal.
Fantasy
tomorrow.
Baseball draft? So at the same time as the bracket reveal?
Yeah, I'm getting excited.
Bro, you should have just pushed that back, man, to like Monday.
Getting excited, bro.
I would just push that back the next week.
I'm not the commissioner.
Yeah,
man.
You should be the commissioner, right?
No, man, I don't want those responsibilities with these knuckleheads.
Oh, I can about imagine if these knuckleheads are who I think they are. But like I said, man, we got a lot to get to today, so we got to wrap things up the way we always do each and every Saturday morning, looking at some of the ball games going on this weekend and giving our picks. Oh yeah, time for that fire beat. But oh wait, we don't have Cody here to do the beat. We just have him not here at all. That's how things go, I guess.
That's
what's hot in the streets, bro. But we got to start things off talking about the Big Ten semifinal matchup: Wisconsin, Michigan State. Who you got?
I'm gonna go with Wisconsin, man. I heard that you and Greg Peterson was big on them, but I was already big on them. They're playing really well right now. Give me Wisconsin in a very close game, man.
All right, hopping over to the SEC semifinal: Tennessee, Kentucky. This is a 2 o'clock tip. Of course, it can wind up getting pushed back a little bit. Beyond that point, where does the power lie in your mind?
To me, it's Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee's been the most consistent team all season long. Kentucky might be a little bit hotter right now, but Tennessee just the steady Eddie all year.
Yep.
I got to go with them. I think they poised to make a deep postseason run as well. I think they're going to win the SEC and get the number one seed.
All right, moving on down to the ACC Men's Tournament Final, Florida State, Duke. Duke, 8-point favorites. I'm definitely surprised there because, like I said, like we mentioned during the break, Florida – man's not hot, he on fire. This team is an absolute beast, but I got to go with the Duke Blue Devils winning.
Well, since losing to Boston College, Florida State's rattled off almost 15 wins. The one loss in that time stretch has been to red-hot North Carolina. With all that being said, though, Duke's just a different animal with Zion in the lineup.
It really
Zion's
is.
Zion's not there. I picked Florida State to win the game. I think Florida State might cover the spread, but Zion just kind of carries them over the Seminoles.
I'm going to flip things over to some golf because we got the Louisiana Open next weekend, but we're talking Players' Championship. Currently, round three, Tommy Fleetwood in the tied for first with Rory McIlroy at 12 under. Outside of that, everybody else is kind of at 9-under, 8-under, at least according to the standings I'm seeing right now. Who do you think is going to win the Players' Championship?
Well, I'm going to go with Tommy Fleetwood. Look, Rory stormed into contention last week, and people thought he was going to run away with it. He just kind of laid an egg on Sunday. That's kind of been the story with Rory the last few years. Tommy Fleetwood hits the ball a long, long way. I think he's going to take advantage of that at Sawgrass, and he's going to come away with the victory.
All right, last one. Let's just go with the doubleheader here. With LSU, Kentucky, once again, first pitch 2 o'clock. Then game two will either be at 6:30 or an hour after game one completes, however it winds up working. It'll be start no later than 6:30 game number two. So who you got?
Pivotal matchup, start SEC play. Look, LSU got to get on board early right here because the schedule's just not favorable after this. Give me LSU winning one out of two today and winning one tomorrow to win two out of three in the series. I think that's enough to kind of propel them and get them playing their best baseball moving forward.
I got to wind up leaning towards LSU as well, so because I think the Bats wake up this weekend. I think they can get things done. They're at home. They're playing with a lot of heart and a lot of their mind. And I think they winds up rallying this team to get things done opening SEC weekend with a clean sweep, and I'd say they wind up winning the doubleheader, at least one of them. They wind up hitting double-digit in terms of runs. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do.
Game one really makes me nervous with the left-handed pitcher that Kentucky's got on the mound. I mean, LSU's three of their top four hitters, all left-handers. So that one kind of has me a little bit iffy, but I do think the Tigers do enough to win one out of two.
They have to. They have to win at least one of the two and two out of the three to be able to start off SEC play the right way. And hey, you started off your Saturday the right way by listening to the producers. We'll be back next week. I believe we're cut by half hour because of the misease of a. I have to pull it up again just to see, make
baseball,
sure. Yeah, I believe baseball is going to.
We're going
to
be.
But again, it could be LSU basketball. We don't know what's going to be set up for, where they could be playing in the near future. But the show's over. and we're done. Be back with you next week. Peace.